All right, so we are going to be doing NTI, Revelation chapter 19. And that begins on page 484.
You know, before you start, the one thing that Danielle helped me, my daughter is in the process of buying a house. And you know how you try to think of everything, that to cover everything. And she said, Regina said, you just go one step at a time.
Yeah.
And that's what I said, oh boy, that's so helpful. Okay, now we're going to meet with the broker. That's all.
That's all.
There's nothing else going on. That's just all that's going on. And to stay on that step. And you can apply that to everything.
Yeah.
I thought that was really what I needed to hear.
Long before I was on the spiritual path, back in my old work life, there was a project manager in my company, and I remember she said that if you're feeling overwhelmed, and she's talking about, you know, project management, she said if you're feeling overwhelmed, it's because you're thinking about more than the one thing you're supposed to be thinking about right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is what I'm supposed to think about right now, and if I just think about that, then I have clarity, I'm sharp, I'm, you know, focused, and then now I'm supposed to think about this. So, you know, a while ago when Dan was talking, I started to say it, and then I didn't, but he was talking about the things in his ego's story, the important things in his life that he must think about or he's being irresponsible. And I started to say, I like to think about my work when I'm doing my work. The question is, when I'm not doing my work, am I still thinking about it? Right? I mean, if I'm composing an email that I'm going to send out to 1,000 people, I'm looking at that email, I'm looking at my grammar, I'm looking for typos, I'm thinking about the best way to say it, right? I think about my work while I'm doing my work. But then when it's done, do I leave it and go on to whatever is next, you know? So, and that's what I think of as the spinning mind. The spinning mind is thinking about things it doesn't need to be thinking about right now. It's just, you know, spinning. But thinking, you could say, has a place. I mean, even when you're when your inspiration is moving through, you know, inspiration still allows you to think. You know, like I said, like when I'm composing an email, you know, still looking at the structure of the sentences, what sentence do I want to put here? But there's also a flow that's happening where it's not a struggle, if that makes any sense. So like the thinking and the inspiration are working together, right?
Right.
If I was a dog, I would sniff things and I'd be excited when I saw a squirrel or a rabbit, you know, and I'd wag my tail when I was happy. But I'm not a dog, I'm a person. And humans think. The question is, you know, that's what we do, we think. But the question is that thinking appropriate thinking, like you're thinking about your job right then while you're doing it, or is it inappropriate thinking? You know, you're being absent to where you are because of the thinking that's happening.
Yeah, that's where I find I've been absent, and I pull myself back, you know. So I think I'm getting a lot better.
Yeah, and listening to someone is an excellent opportunity. I think that's where I really first started training myself to be present, is when someone else was speaking, training myself to listen and not think.
Yeah, I got to pick that up.
You picked that one up.
That was a gem. I just got, you know, sometimes I... You just get handed to you. But I was, we're not recording.
No, yeah, we are recording. Do you want me to pause it?
No.
I can pause it. No? Okay. Yeah, I started the recording just before this discussion started. Usually we have discussions before we turn the recorder on, and we have discussions after, but we don't usually have discussions while the recording is on. So this is a little unique, but we're getting towards the end. We might as well break all of our rules. I think the reason that we started that rule about not having a discussion when the recording was on, a long time ago, we had 17 people in the room, and there was no way the recording would have been able to pick up all those voices. So the rule was, when the recorder's on, I do the primary talking, and that was for the sound quality, and then we had discussions before and after. Even now, with four of us, it's still a challenge. I call it blow you up. I have to blow your voices up. But it's easier with four. At least we're all closer to the machine than when we had 17 people and they were all spread out. It didn't work at all if other people were talking, you know, while the recording was on. So, all right. Well, Dan looks like he doesn't want to share whatever it was he was.
Well, I was really fortunate that I was working closely with this guy very, very closely, and he was actually going through like real estate deals and stuff, and I was asking him questions about how do you stay in the moment when you've got these things that are all future focused. And so as I actually, you know, been through what's similar to what Danielle's going through. Mm-hmm. Something that it was a life lesson that, you know, I actually got to go through the process of like, how do you sit in office with the mortgage banker and talk about, you know, this 30-year, you know, so what's gonna happen and stuff. So it was really good hands on that. Like I said, just really fortunate being in the right place at the right time with the right people, actually doing the work.
Yeah. All right, so let's begin then, NTI Revelation chapter 19. God's judgment is true, because God's judgment is non-judgmental. God is only aware of God, so that illusion does not exist in the mind of God. Illusion is seeing what is as if it is what isn't. Seeing illusion is seeing only that which is purely false. This seeing is not through the body's eyes, just as true perception is not seen through the body's eyes. That which the body's eyes see is wholly neutral. Illusion is seen through the thinking mind, which judges and interprets based upon false premises. Illusion is gone when the thinking mind is disengaged by the one who desires to see through spirit. So this is really interesting that illusion is not actually seen with the body's eyes, because, you know, if I look out with the body's eyes, I see Francine, I see Dan, I see Priscilla, I see an organ, I see a piano, I see coffee cups. And, you know, some people would say the body's eyes are seeing separation, right? But that's not true. That's not true. What is it that interprets and says that's a Francine and that's a Dan? It's the mind. Yeah, it's not the body's eyes. It's the mind. You know, when the mind is clear, the mind looks out and sees isness, you know, isness, right? Even though it knows this isness is to drink, right? I wouldn't drink a Francine, right? But this water I'll drink, you know, so it's still, you know, there's still the trained brain, we could say. The trained brain that has learned to live in the world as a human and knows, you know, to drink out of a cup, and just like it knows how to move legs and walk a body, right? But the mind sees isness when the mind is clear. The mind knows everything is alive. The mind knows everything is awareness. When the mind is not clear, the mind sees separation. It has nothing to do with what the body's eyes see. Starting with verse 3. Hallelujah! When the thinking mind is released, illusion is no more. For all that is seen through the mind truly. So that's an interesting sentence. When the thinking mind is released. Gosh, you know, when I read that now, I think something must be imprisoning the thinking mind if it has to be released. What is imprisoning the thinking mind? Ah, my attention. My attention. Right? I'm holding the thinking mind with my attention. And if I don't give my attention to the thinking mind, or if when I notice I have, I take it back, the thinking mind is released. And what does it do when it's free? it disappears. It runs off through the, you can imagine this, runs off through the field, runs away from the prison, and disappears over the horizon. That's what happens. If I'm holding on to a thought, let me make up a thought. Who has a thought for me? Let's see. You can tell I don't have many problems anymore because I have to make up so many stories. But let me make up a thought. I don't know. I'm worried. I have two cars that need tires, so let's assume I'm worried about money. Oh, and I just paid a huge college tuition bill today. That fits the story really well. And I had a tree cut yesterday, and I had a plumber come yesterday, and my homeowner. Last week I said I had a stack of bills I didn't know how I was going to pay. They're almost all paid now, by the way. It's all working out. But somebody gave me some money, of course, by the way. Let's pretend like I am worried about these stack of bills and how am I going to pay them. Okay, so I have this story running in my mind. Oh no, I got this bill and I don't know how I'm going to pay it, and I got this bill and I don't know how to, and I can't even make up stories like that anymore because I don't think that way. But whatever goes on in your mind when you're worried about paying your bills, it's all going on. And then I realize, look at me, I'm thinking, that I can't pay these bills, and I don't really know that. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to let go of these thoughts. The second I take my attention off of them, they disappear. They run away. They're no longer imprisoned, right?
Yeah.
I am imprisoning the thinking mind with my attention. How do I release the thinking mind? How do I set it free? By taking my attention off of it.
That's why I'm here tonight.
Why?
That's a very good lesson.
You need to hear that, huh?
I did.
Yeah, you just take your attention off of it. Yeah. Would you believe I don't have any bills on my desk now?
Great.
A week ago I had a stack. I was worried about how I was going to pay them. I just didn't know yet. And now I have no bills. A week later. I'm sure more will come. But I have no bills. So, you don't have to worry about things. So let's go on to verses 4 to 5. The thinking mind is the veil that hides the symbol of truth with illusion. The thinking mind is the veil that hides the symbol of truth with illusion. So what this is really saying is that the world is not the truth, but it can be the symbol of truth. Like I said, you can look at Francine, and instead of seeing, whatever you think about Francine and all of this predefined ideas that you have about Francine, you can look at Francine and see isness. You can look at Francine and be present. You can look at Francine and enjoy the moment. And in that way, Francine is then the symbol of truth, right? But you can't really say that a Francine is ever the truth. A Francine is nothing but a symbol. It's a symbol of separation. If I look at Francine with all of my predefined ideas about what a Francine is, or it's a symbol of truth if I look at Francine with openness and awareness of business. But a Francine is nothing but a symbol. A Regina is nothing but a symbol. Right? All of these things are symbols. None of them are truth itself. The thinking mind is the veil that hides the symbol of truth with illusion. The thinking mind will keep you fearful. The thinking mind will judge and separate you from yourself. You cannot see clearly through the thinking mind because the thinking mind was made so you would not see. Remember I told you guys last week that even though I wrote all of NTI, and it's through a scribing process, not as the author, but even though I wrote all of NTI, it wasn't until we got to around NTI Revelation chapter 17 that I started to get it, that I was supposed to let go of my own thinking. I didn't know that that's what this whole thing was about. And so again, we can see now that Regina's getting it, and now that we're near the end of this book, Holy Spirit is really just hitting this point very, very clearly to make sure that Regina never forgets again. This is what you are to do, is let go of that thinking. So we're just kind of hearing the same theme over and over again. The thinking mind will keep you fearful. The thinking mind will judge and separate you from yourself. You cannot see clearly through the thinking mind because the thinking mind was made so you would not see. Be grateful for your true self, which is beyond the thinking mind. Be grateful for reminders to rest. Observe the thinking mind. See how it works. Through watching it, you will learn you have need for it no more. And in fact, Francine, that's one of the things you said last week. You said that long, long time ago, you were looking at your thinking and wondering, you know, what's this for? You know?
Yeah. And yeah, I could feel that it was noisy and that a lot of it was not necessary and it would be better without it. And so why did God create that? It's not understanding at that time.
Yeah, why did God create that? So what this is saying is if you haven't observed your thinking yet, if you do observe your thinking, you're going to come to the same conclusion that Francine came to, that it's worthless, that it doesn't have value, that it's just a bunch of noise, right? And when you really come to that, you'll let go of it. As long as you think your thinking still has value, you're going to hold on to it. As long as you think your thinking has value, you're going to hold on to it. So you need to watch it. You need to notice how often it's wrong. You know, how many stories does your thinking mind tell you about some impending disaster that never happens? You know?
That reminds me, that's been happening a lot to me. I mean, I have, you know, you backtrack a little bit. You hear these commercials about medicine and they tell you it may cause suicidal thoughts and all that. This is sort of the thing that's been happening to me lately. They're not suicidal thoughts, but I mean they're thoughts, the mind just takes this journey that this could happen, you know. And I said, well, I don't want to go there. I don't want to think that. And then it throws me another one, just weird, like things that could, you know, like my son was traveling to Brooklyn, New York, you know, the plane, and plane could crash, you know, and then you'd never find his body, you'd never know where he's at. And I'm saying, well, I don't think that. But I'm getting a lot of those that I right away say, I don't want to go with that, you know. But I'm wondering, why is that all, why am I bombarded with those? I never used to think that way before. That's a bunch of little
my guess lights. Is, and I don't know this for a fact, so take it with a grain of salt, my guess is there's a worry energy that's been there all of your life, but repressed, not anything you were totally aware of, and it's now coming up out of the subconscious, and you're seeing it more conscious so that you can let it go. That's what happens, is these repressed energies become more conscious so that we can let them go.
But, you know, other time I would say it might frighten me, you know, like maybe this is a premonition and all that. It doesn't do that to me at all. I just see it as a random thought that I don't want anything to do with and I don't want to latch on to it and I just, you know, shake it away. But then pretty soon there's another one, you know, a different variety, the same kind of thing, like some crisis or some death or something. But it isn't frightening because I'm not believing it or whatever, but I'm bombarded with
it. Yeah, well, you know, I took Jasmine to college last week and they had these parent meetings. And one thing I could tell during these parent meetings is that a lot of people worry because the questions that the parents were asking, you could just tell these people have been sitting around all summer long worrying about everything that could possibly go wrong with their child while their child is away in college. So worry energy is a very popular energy. So it's coming up now to be released. Just keep releasing it. Yeah, just keep releasing it. All right, so let's see. Starting with sentence 5 at the top of page 485, again, be grateful for yourself, which is beyond the thinking mind. Be grateful for reminders to rest. Observe the thinking mind. See how it works. Through watching it, you will learn you have need for it no more. Hallelujah for the vision without the thinking mind. Praise God and the truth which is true. Never can wholeness be lost to illusion. Never can the truth be through. Recommit to yourself through the sight of spirit. It is the vision that sees. Be grateful for hills and for grass and for wind. Praise joy with all that you see. The sight of spirit is a choice that you make. It is the choice to marry the Lamb. For with this choice is innocence known, and glory is seen through the land. So a little poem, or actually I think it's probably a song, a little song for us, reminding us again to let go of the faults and embrace what I'm going to call true perception. Because again, it's telling us to be grateful for hills and for grass and for wind. That's not truth, that's true perception. Right? And one thing that happens to me more and more is that I become forgetful in isness. And here's what I mean. Francine probably didn't even notice, but when Francine and I were coming through the back door of the church today, I opened the door, and I always relock the door so that that back door is locked while we're here in the sanctuary. But as I was locking the door, I noticed a spider. And the spider crawled away from the lock and crawled underneath the handle. And I'm like this, watching the spider, almost forgetting that, oh yeah, I'm supposed to walk down the stairs now and go in and set up for NTI. I got totally lost in watching that isness called spider, right? I was just enjoying watching him crawling around. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
It's quite enjoyable.
Yeah. So that's what this is asking us to do, is to get lost in the isness that is present in this form. You know, love the wind, feel the wind on your face and love the wind, you know. Lay in the grass and love the grass, or walk in the grass, or even just look at the grass and how beautiful and green it is and love the grass. Love the trees. You know, just love everything is what this is asking us to do. Right? Very much like, you guys probably don't know Michael Langford, but some of the people listening do, Francine does. It's a lot like Michael Langford's loving all method, right? Just love every experience. Love everything. And when you're loving everything, when you're loving everything, you're not judging. Right? You're not using the thinking mind, you're using the heart.
Sometimes my friends wonder what's wrong with me.
Because?
Just for example, like working in the garden, or doing like yard work, and then I just get lost and see exactly what you're talking about. They're not, you know, doing the same thing that
right.
I am, so they're questioning.
Well, you know, small children get lost like that, you know, right? It reminds me again of Jesus saying, you know, in order to inherit the kingdom, you must become like little children. Small children get lost. You know, here you are, you have to go to work, and you're trying to get the kid to get in the car so you can put it in the car seat and drop it off at daycare, and the kid's staring at an ant. And you're like yelling, come on, I gotta get to work. And the kid looks even more at the ant, right? The kid's lost in the ant.
I noticed the incidences coincide with the meditation. There would be a matter of consistency of that practice. It tend to be more lost more often
when you meditate.
Consistent.
Yeah.
It's training the mind.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
To the heart.
It's wonderful to get lost in isness, right? It's wonderful.
I do that a lot of my meditation when I'm swimming or when I walk. You know, when I'm swimming, I pull my arm through the water, and I'm just fascinated with what water is, you know. And I just can't believe it. It's a marvelous thing, you know, water. And I realize everything is God, and so then I tell God, you know, what a great variety you are, you know. And so I do a lot of my meditating when I'm swimming or walking, and trying to be real conscious of every step I take when I'm walking, and how the foot moves and how we're made, you know, and it just...
Yeah. Yeah, and this is the Buddhist practice of mindfulness, right? Being very, very, very present. One of the things I like to do, I have a circle of stones. I don't have a labyrinth, but I have a circle of stepping stones in my backyard, and I like to go out there and just walk in that circle, just, you know, being very, very mindful of my feet on the stones, as well as the movement of the body, as well as the feel of the wind, the sound of the birds. It's one of my favorite things to do is just to walk in a circle in my backyard. All right, so starting with verse 9. Blessed are those who are invited to the wedding supper of the Lamb, for those are the ones who see. And those who see, see only one, because one is all there is to see. Now what's happening here, of course, is that NTI is using the symbols that are introduced in Revelation chapter 19. That's why it's talking about being invited to the wedding supper of the Lamb. But really what NTI is doing is using Lamb to represent innocence and wedding to represent commitment. And it's saying, blessed are those who hear the calling, feel invited, hear the calling to commit to innocence, right? And innocence, you could call, is non-judgment, right? So you're committing to innocence when you choose to love everything. When you choose the loving all method, you're committing to innocence. You're committing to non-judgment. Verse 10. Behold the reflection of truth. There are no differences that can be seen. The canvas has been painted by joy. Celebrate our oneness in the playground of a dream. Awaken through peace and joy. Again, this is repeatedly just encouraging us to love everything, enjoy everything. And again, if you're doing that, you can't be judging. You know, you can't be judging. One of the things that happened to me this week was that I left my daughter at school. And I cried a little, saying goodbye to her, but nothing major, nothing I didn't expect. And I walked out and I felt fine. But about an hour later, while driving home, I was driving home by myself, it hit. And there was just this emptiness, you know, like a death, really, just this emptiness. And I started crying, and I was really wailing. I was really crying quite hard. And I could see that spiritual ego wanting to show up and judge, you know, like you should be able to be happy or something like this. And I just said to myself, I don't want to do anything at all but embrace this experience, right? And as I embraced the experience, and you got to get this, it's hard to explain to people who don't understand. You got to get this picture. I was crying, and I was crying hard, but it felt precious to me. Like, because I wasn't judging myself for crying hard. It felt precious, you know, like a very precious moment to be mourning the loss of motherhood, the loss of the mother role, right? It felt very precious, and I felt connected to every mother who has ever lived who has in some way let go of her child, right? It may have looked like a bad experience, but it didn't feel like a bad experience. What would have made it a bad experience would have been if I'd listened to that spiritual ego judging me for what I was feeling, right? And so I cried for, you know, an hour and a half or so. The next morning when I woke up, there was a little bit of crying. And now I'm fine. You know, now there's a new beginning. I've embraced the new beginning. My daughter has embraced the new beginning. And everything is wonderful again. So this loving everything that is being described here doesn't just mean loving the wind and the grass and the hills, right? If you commit to innocence, it means loving everything. It means, you know, when someone that you love dies and mourning happens, that emptiness shows up and mourning happens, that you love mourning, right? My guess is if you're able to love mourning instead of resisting mourning, you're going to move through it more quickly. You're going to go deeply into it. You're going to feel it completely. And you're going to move right through it. And then you're going to find a new beginning on the other side of that morning, right? Because wherever there's an ending, there's also a beginning.
You can't love half.
You can't love half. You have to love everything. Yeah, you have to love everything. All right, so verses 11 to 16. True desire must lead in the last days of the thinking mind, for the thinking mind will try to disguise itself as true desire. For this you must remain on watch. So the thinking mind will try to disguise itself as true desire. That's the spiritual ego, right? That's what tried to show up and start judging me for feeling emptiness and crying, right? That's it. It will also try and tell you, just like it will try and lower you through judgment, it will also try and raise you up through judgment. It will tell you how much better you're doing than the others, right? I'm much better at forgiveness than she is. You know, I'm you know, more enlightened than he is. If you really look at the spiritual ego, you can recognize it because there is always judgment in it. It is not non-judgment. It is not the innocence of the Lamb. It is always judgment. Whether I'm judging myself to be better or judging myself to be less than, it's judgment, right? And so you want to watch out for that thinking mind pretending to be spirit, the voice of spirituality, the voice of wisdom. Recognize it for judgment when it is judgment and learn to let it go. Now, starting with sentence 3 at the very bottom of page 485. True desire is known by its desire for only one thing. True desire does not desire within the world. True desire does not desire to test itself. True desire desires only this, to know thyself. So true desire is what I call that very sincere feeling, which I think that we all touch at one point or another. We also leave it and we forget about it, but we touch it. It's that feeling that only wants truth, only wants God, only wants self, however you describe it. That's it. That's true desire. And so if, for example, I want to make sure lots and lots of people buy NTI because it's really helpful, it helps you guys, it will help them too, that's not true desire. Right? That's not true desire. True desire is wanting only to know the truth. It's singular. It has no other desire in it. Anything else can lead you astray. If I start becoming concerned about how many people read NTI, I'm starting off on a detour. Right? So I often call it my true north. You know, if I just keep remembering my only purpose is to awaken, that's the way that I word it, it allows me to let go of anything that arises when I remember that. I can let go of everything else because nothing else is that singular desire. And the only thing that I'm holding to is that singular desire. Starting with sentence 8. The thinking mind desires the delay of true desire. In the hour when true desire is nearly full force, the thinking mind will look for a way to lead you from your true desire, possibly also by leading you to think you are fulfilling it. This is what King of Kings and Lord of Lords points to. Whenever you feel self-satisfaction in the role you have been asked to play, know that role is not true desire. For true desire never leads to a role that is satisfactory to the self. True desire leads only from self to the wholeness of the realization of truth. I think what NTI is talking about here is, I think it's what happens to a lot of people who have very sincerely followed the spiritual path very far. You know, they very sincerely followed it very far. And they're getting very, very close to a point of awakening. And the ego sneaks in and they become concerned about followers. Or they become concerned about whether their books are selling. Or they become concerned about whether people are listening to them. Or they become concerned about whether they're clearer than another person. Or they become concerned, unfortunately, about having sex with their followers. Or they become concerned about making money. Or something, some concern that's related enough to their spiritual path that isn't quite the true desire. Some concern rises up to distract them, and they run off in that direction. And I think this happens to so many people. I think that there are a lot of people who went very far, and that's why they can speak with such clarity, because they did in a very sincere way go very, very far, and you don't forget what you have gained, what you have learned. But then in the end, this spiritual ego swooped in and distracted them, and that's why you also see in them these inconsistencies, right? Where they're taking money from people, having sex with people, you know, I mean, it happens so often. And people get confused by that because they do seem so enlightened. I mean, they are so clear. They gained all of that clarity genuinely. But before the last step was taken, they were... And that's what this is warning about. This is saying this is what the thinking mind is going to try to do to you and you and you and me. It's not just those guys. I saw a guru the other night on... I don't watch this TV show very much, but I happened to see it. It was a guru, so I did watch it. It's something about, I think it's called The Hunt with John Walsh or something. It's on CNN where he tries and finds people who have abused children or kidnapped children. And this was a guru who was having sex with the children of his followers. Yeah. And, you know, that's how this kind of thing happens. You know, somehow the ego gets in there, even though you've gone very far, and gets your attention in some way and leads you astray. And each one of us are going to be susceptible in a different way. Like maybe there's no way we're going to have sex with anybody's children, right? Like that would not be a temptation to me. But are there things that could be a temptation to me? Sure. Does the ego know what they are? Sure. So do I have to know what they are? Yes. And do I have to be alert to make sure that I do not get distracted and fall for those temptations in my last hour? Yes, that's my job. And that's what this is telling us to do. Be real clear on what true desire is. It's a desire for one thing, awakening. Nothing else is it. No matter how close it sounds, nothing else is it. Don't be fooled and distracted in your last hour. Verses 17 to 18. The ego will emerge as you follow the false true desire of the thinking mind. But because you want to believe this false desire, you will look away from that which appears only that it may be seen. So this is saying that we probably are going to fall for the tricks at least a little bit. You know, because we're going to want what the ego's offering us, whether it's money, popularity, romantic relationship, you know, whatever. We're going to want it. And so when the ego starts offering it, chances are we're going to fall for it at least a little. But it's saying the real reason it's showing up is so we can let go of even those last temptations, those things that we are most susceptible to. So pay attention as you start to get tempted. And, oh, that sounds so good. You know, pay attention. Ah, look at me. Look at me starting to lean off the path. This is rising up only for me to let go of it. That's why it's here. I'm going to let go of this. I'm going to return myself to true north, wanting only awakening, only truth, only thyself. Verses 19 to 21. I have very, very, very little underlined in NTI, probably because it's my book and I didn't need to underline it like I do other people's books. But I have 19 to 21 underlined. The only way to pass through the tests of the thinking mind without being led astray by false desire is to remain fully focused on true desire now. There is no other way. That's what I have underlined. You have to continually remind yourself what you truly want. If you don't continually remind yourself what you truly want, you will be led astray. That's what this says. So I think that's so extremely clear that it's worth being possibly the only underlined sentence in all of NTI in my book. Sentence 3. This may seem to be a time of sadness, for you will be asked to let go of that which you still hold faith in. This may be a time of fear. Remain quiet in trust, focused on your true desire, and you will sail through the thinking mind's tortures on the wings of faith in truth. Now again, Jasmine has just left, so there's one less person in our house. And now, on the heels of Jasmine leaving, Danielle has decided to leave, move out and build a house, right? She asked me how I felt about this, you know, how I felt about suddenly being alone. And what I told her was, my ego is probably not going to like it. You know, my ego is probably not going to like suddenly being alone. But the heart loves it. The heart understands that this time is being given to me so that I can go in and meditate hours a day, so I can be focused in a way that I could not be if other people were in the house, right? What this is saying in this last paragraph is there may sometimes be some sadness. Why might there be some sadness or some fear? Why might there be some fear? That's because of the part of us that is still listening to the ego who is also going to have an opinion, right? So if I start listening to the ego that's focusing on, oh, now you're all alone, there's nobody around to giggle with. You know, Francine will tell you, Jasmine and Danielle and I, we laugh and giggle. Now there's nobody around to giggle with. There's nobody around. Oh, woe is me. There's nobody around to help me clean the house anymore. I still have this huge four-bedroom house with three bathrooms, and I'm the only one here to do the cleaning. You know, I mean, the ego can go on and on and on and on. If I feel any sadness, if I feel any grievance, if I feel any fear, that's showing me the degree to which I am listening to the ego stories. So as soon as I feel that sadness, feel that fear, I need to redirect myself and remind myself why this gift of being alone has been given. And the heart sings. The heart is joyous about it. The heart thinks this is the greatest thing and the best time, right, for me to be alone. But, again, the ego has its opinions. So we have to pay attention to who or what we are listening to within ourselves. Are we listening to the heart, which is leading us consistently to awakening, to know thyself, to know the truth? Or are we listening to the ego, who has so many other opinions and so many other desires about the way things will be? The ego is going to keep us spinning and spinning and spinning. The heart is going to lead us directly. So we have to learn the difference between the two, and we have to choose. We have to commit to the innocence. We have to choose to love the heart, listen to the heart, and to love every experience that is brought to us in this world, because it is all here for our awakening. So this may seem to be a time of sadness, for you will be asked to let go of that which you still hold faith in. This may seem to be a time of fear. Remain quiet in trust, focused on your true desire, and you will sail through the thinking mind's tortures on the wings of faith and truth. And that is the end of NTI Revelation chapter 19. So one thing that we could practice, if you guys feel like it, we have 2 weeks now because I'm going to Ireland. So one thing we could practice is the loving all method. Loving all method. Love everything. And the way to love everything really is not to judge it. And in fact, what Michael Langford would tell you is if you can't love it, you know, like maybe you just were the meanest person you've been in your entire life. You were just really mean and nasty to someone, and immediately there's judgment, and, you know, how in the heck can you go from that to loving yourself? He says that if you can't love it, you can accept it. And if you can't accept it, you can allow it. So if you can love it, love it. If you can't love it, accept it as it is. If you have trouble even accepting it as it is, then just allow it. And really, you know, you can usually do one of the three if you have your mind set on true desire, right? So why don't we spend the next 2 weeks practicing loving everything? If we can't love it, we'll accept it. If we can't accept it, we'll at least allow it. And what we're doing is letting go of judgment. Okay? And I will stop the recording and we'll have some silence.